If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Welcome to Mind Pump. This is the world's top fitness and health and entertainment podcast that you'll find anywhere. In this episode, we answer fitness and health questions asked by listeners like you. And in the beginning of the episode, we talk about scientific studies. We talk about our own training issues that are happening. We mention sponsors often. Here's what we talked about in this episode of Mind Pump. We started by talking about mindset and lifting. How you go into your workout mindset-wise can really dictate whether or not you succeed
or fail. It makes a big difference.
Then I talk about the study on junk food and memory. Apparently, eating junk food can negatively affect your memory and your self-control in your brain. That's kind of crazy.
Weird.
Then we talked about the group class episode we did recently. Got a little bit of heat. Adam talks about that. Then Justin brought up Hugo Boss and how they designed the Nazi uniforms.
Hey, uncomfortable fact.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
I talked about how we are seeing the worst week in the market since 2008, so things seem to be going down, which brought us to talk about Bitcoin and how some people have lost all their Bitcoin money because they lost their code. That's kind of crazy. We talked about all of the avenues in which you can consume our awesome fitness content, all the different platforms, so make sure you listen to that part. Then we talked about resistance training and Alzheimer's. There's a study that showed for the first time ever that an intervention was able to stop Alzheimer's. You won't want to miss that part. And then we talked about a middle school that apparently became communist.
Really grinds my gears.
Then we got into the fitness questions. The first question is, when I'm supplementing with creatine, should I take a different amount on the days that I work out versus the days that I don't work out? So we talk all about creatine there. That's a supplement that we're all definitely in favor of. Now, you may be wondering which brand or where should I get the best creatine. We work with a company called Legion. We like Legion because their labels are super transparent. They provide third-party testing. There are no artificial sweeteners. They're basically a great supplement company, and they have a phenomenal creatine product called Recharge. Anyway, you get discounts on all of their products because you are a Mind Pump listener. Here's what you do. Go to buylegion.com. That's buylegion.com/mindpump. And at checkout, you'll get 20% off, or you'll get double rewards points if you're an existing customer. The next question, this person says, how can you get quality sleep when you're working shifts? You know, the World Health Organization labels shift work as a carcinogen. So if you work shifts, late shifts, you definitely want to listen to that part of the episode. And we mentioned a few strategies, one of which involves blue light blocking glasses. Our favorite company of blue light blocking glasses is Felix Gray. They make stylish glasses that don't change the color of the whole room. Here's what you do. Go to Felix Gray Glasses. That's F-E-L-I-X-G-R-A-Y glasses.com/mindpump. You'll get hooked up with free shipping and free returns. We also mentioned listening to certain sounds and beats that put your brain into more of a sleep state. There's a company called Brain FM. They make a sleep sound that literally puts your brain in that state. It's crazy. It works like magic. No joke.
It really works.
We have a huge discount for you. If you go to brain.fm /mindpump, you'll get 20% off any of their sounds. The next question, this person says, do you believe it's possible to become a professional athlete or achieve a very high level of success with a balanced lifestyle? So we talk about that. And then the final question, as a trainer, what should you consider before leaving a big box gym to become an independent trainer? Also, we are in March. One of our new programs, we just released this program last year.
It's St. Paddy's Day.
Super soon. Popular MAPS Powerlift is 50% off. Now, MAPS Powerlift is a powerlifting-inspired workout program. So if you want to compete in powerlifting, get this program. Now, if you don't want to compete in powerlifting, but you want to dramatically improve your squat, your deadlift, your bench press, if you want to get stronger, build more solid muscle, get a bigger butt, because you know the squat and deadlift are great
for
that. MAPS Powerlift is an amazing program. We wrote this program with Ben Pollock. He's a decorated powerlifting champion. Again, it's 50% off. Here's how you get the discount. Go to mapspowerlift.com. That's mapspowerlift.com and use the code POWER50. That's POWER50, no space, for the discount.
T-shirt time!
And it's t-shirt time.
Ah, shit, Doug. You know it's my favorite time of the week.
Woo-wee.
Me too.
We have four winners, two for iTunes and two for Facebook. For iTunes, we have Robbie Masso and NinjaCat76. For Facebook, we have Sarah Elizabeth Lynn and Brian Wall. All of you are winners. Send the name I just read to iTunes@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
Stop. Stop talking with your mouth full. You're disgusting.
No, I'm saying.
Both you guys are gross. Adam has eaten on the podcast by far the most.
Yeah. Only because of bodybuilding days.
I've never eaten on the podcast. Never once.
Really?
No.
I'll contest that.
You have an awful memory.
No. Yeah. That's the best memory in this room.
That's not saying much.
That's true.
Yeah, you're not winning that
you
hard.
You got a stoner and a CTE patient over here. I got the best memory in the room.
Here's your ribbon.
Way to go. Out of people with brain damage, my memory is the best. Boy, oh boy. Speaking of the brain, I did a post the other day. It's gotten a lot of traction. Speaking of memory, I forgot the word. It's got a lot of people.
You're doing well.
On mindset, I talked about the importance of your mindset when you go into a workout. You know, we talk so much about mindset in the health and fitness space, but it's more like you got to have a positive mindset. You got to, you know, think good things, that kind of stuff. I'm not talking about that, although that's important. I'm talking about like the mindset you go into your workout with, because that will dictate whether or not whatever phase you're working out in is successful or not. Like think about the mindset when you're going to go into lift heavy. You know what I mean? You want to be tight. You want to be stable. It's about maximizing leverage, lifting as much weight as possible. Focus, though, different though, right? Because if I'm going there to train like body sculpting or bodybuilding, the focus is totally different. I'm not trying to think of maximum leverage. In fact, oftentimes with bodybuilding, and Adam, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. You're actually thinking the opposite of maximum leverage.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to make the exercise harder, which is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, like when you bench or when you squat or when you do an exercise, like how can I make this lightweight?
How can I make my muscles work more in this?
Yeah, like how can I make this lightweight feel as heavy as possible? How can I focus on the squeeze and the pump? Total opposite from heavy lifting. And then there's correctional exercise, which is neither of those things. When I'm doing correctional exercise, the mindset is connect to the muscle, intrinsic tension, totally, totally different.
The mindset is so powerful that you could take a program that is written exactly the same and create complete novelty without changing any exercises, sets, reps, or weight.
Just by the mindset.
Just by the mindset.
110%.
I got to know the intent going into it.
And this is one of my favorite things about being somebody who's never been attached to a modality or a box, or you know, I've never allowed anyone to put me in this category. Sometimes
you're like that song from Whitesnake.
You can't do it.
Yeah,
what's that?
You can't put me in a box
again on my own. Like you're just
stupid.
You're just a free man.
Because you can go
it's
to the
like free bird.
Dude. You can go to the gym, and I can go to the gym. Same exercise, everything, and I could think like an athlete and move explosively and train with that mindset. Mm-hmm. I can go and think of I'm going in like a power lifter mentality, and I'm looking to get out, exert the most amount of force and weight and move the most I possibly can. And then I could go in like a bodybuilder and try and feel every part of the exercise and get and chase the pump. And it can be a total different feel and even get, I believe, a different adaptation. Even though we're doing the same movement, same everything, but because I changed my mindset into how I'm training, I think makes that big of a difference.
Totally. And this is the main reason. This is the number one reason why if you're listening right now and you follow a MAPS program, you notice we put you in phases that last 3 to 5 weeks rather than mixing up different modalities or different styles within the same week. Because studies will show that you could do low reps, medium reps, high reps in the same week and compare that to doing low reps for 3 weeks, doing medium reps for 3 weeks and high reps for 3 weeks. And the results will be about the same. So people are like, why don't I just mix it up all the time? It's the mindset. And when I'm in a phase of heavy lifting, I want to stay in that mindset every time I work out. When I'm in a phase of bodybuilding or correctional exercise, I want to be in that mindset the whole time, because you're not just, and correct me if I'm wrong, you don't just train the body, you also train the mindset. You guys noticed when you go through a correctional exercise phase, how it takes you like 3 or 4 workouts to get into that mindset, to really get the mindset going? You're training that just as much as you're training the body.
I mean, that's essential. And I mean, each one of those components is a new skill. I mean, and you have to take time in that skill to really develop that skill, and the practice of it is what, you know, the intention is going into each one of those different ventures. And so, you know, like they all look different, but it's important for you to stay in that same space so that, yes, you will be able to get better and refine that process going towards that skill.
Dude, you're training, I remember, who was I talking to? I think I was on a podcast. Someone interviewed me and was asking me about cognitive performance and like what exercises and what workouts are best for the brain. And it dawned on me, we always separate the mind from the body, the brain from the body, like they're two separate things. Really effective training trains your body and your brain, because where's your brain? It's part of your body. The mind comes from the brain. So that mind, when you're training yourself, you want to be as effective as possible. You're not just training the body, you're also training the mind, and that's what creates the most effective program. It's always what makes things the most effective. So,
what was your answer to that when they asked?
Oh, well, I mean, ultimately what I said was, number one, a healthy body is going to produce the best results. If you're really healthy, you're going to get the most cognitive improvement the best cognitive performance. That being said, if we want to break it down even further into, you know, smaller categories and find, okay, besides being healthy, what's the best form of exercise for the brain? Resistance training, because other forms of exercise tend to be repetitive. They tend to be mindless.
Wouldn't you say it's simply the complexity of it?
It's the complexity. You have to be really present. Like, think about running on a treadmill or riding a stationary bike. When you first do it, you got to think about what you're doing. But then after about 10 minutes, we've all done this. We've been on a treadmill. You're just moving. Your body's just moving, and you're thinking of other things. That has its own value, but you're not exercising the brain like you would be when you're lifting weights. Mm-hmm. When you're lifting weights, when you're doing a set, you are present. You can't mindlessly – I mean, you can mindlessly lift weights, but that's a terrible way to do it, and it's never taught that way, at least not the right way. You have to be present with the exercise, because – you're moving in different ranges of motion, you're different planes, it's different exercises, you're training your brain. And then from a physiological standpoint, you know, when we look at cognitive impairment like dementia, Alzheimer's, there's a very strong connection between that and the brain's inability to utilize glucose for energy. This is why when you take someone with dementia or Alzheimer's and you put them on a ketogenic diet, we see cognitive improvement. You don't always see this with everybody, but with people with dementia and Alzheimer's, when they're running on ketones, we've known this for a long time, they have cognitive improvement, and they think it's because, and we actually probably know this now, it's because their brain was not utilizing glucose very well. Well, muscle is a phenomenal insurance against insulin insensitivity, because muscle is very insulin sensitive. Muscle also stores glycogen. You know, as far as the tissues are concerned, it stores a lot of glycogen, except for maybe compared to the liver. So when you build muscle, you're more insulin sensitive. So now you're utilizing glucose better. And then, of course, you're exercising the brain. It's the best form of exercise for brain health.
When you wrote for Max's book, he had you write a chapter in there, right? Is that right?
No, what he did was I contributed
by... referenced you?
Yeah, yeah. So I looked over what he wrote and let him know if what he said was correct or incorrect or whatever.
Did he point this out? Did he talk?
Yeah, we talked about... He made a little point about how resistance training was a very effective way to speed up the metabolism, to, you know, less time spent yields you better results because of that, for brain health. I made all these cases to him. So he did include some of that in the book, which great book. The guy obviously knows what he's talking about. So
yep.
It's really, really good stuff. And then speaking of the mind, of the brain, dude, this study came out on junk food. You're going to love this one.
Oh.
Yeah, let me pull this one up. So they did a study on junk food, and they found that eating junk food, so I'm going to read it right now. A new study has found that consuming a Western-style diet rich in junk food, so heavily processed foods, can subtly yet rapidly impair brain function in your hippocampus. So they did a study where they had people eat a junk food diet, and then they were imaging the hippocampus, and they were seeing that it was affecting the hippocampus negatively. Hmm. Now, there's no coincidence here that that brain region is associated with memory and, ready for this, appetite regulation.
Wow.
That's why, have you noticed when you eat junk food, you start to crave it more and more?
Yeah. Sure.
Isn't that crazy?
Now, a critic would say that the main factor in that study probably was that they were in a caloric surplus versus a deficit. And had they been in a deficit eating junk food, would it produce the same results?
You know, I'm not sure. I can look up the study, but I think they did control for calories, but I'm not sure.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah, so I'm not quite sure, but you might be right, dude, because high calories tends to always have a negative effect on us.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the only thing that ever worries me about studies like that. That even though I think it obviously aligns with our message and it supports what we're trying to explain to most people that of avoiding processed foods, which I think we all stand by that statement. But then we reference a study like that, and it's like, oh, okay, well, if the calories were, you know, 1,000 extra calories and that person should be consuming every day, is it more because of the junk food or is it more because they were in such a high surplus?
It's interesting. Would that also account for, like, some people's feeling of brain fog, you know, based off of their nutrition and everything else, you know, poor memory?
Totally. When I eat bad, I notice that. You know what my main motivation for eating healthy these days is? Because of the podcast and what we do is staying sharp.
Yeah.
It used to be to change my body composition, look good.
It is pretty funny that we eat performance to talk. But it is. It's true. Like, we've experimented with a lot of different things, too.
Athletes still?
Totally.
Are we considered athletes?
Yeah. I mean, I got a headband.
My jaw muscles are really strong.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Back to what you said about calories. What's one of the number one things that heavily processed foods promote?
Yeah, eating more.
Eating more calories. Right. So it's like, you know, they do those studies and they find people, when they do control for macros, God, that study, that one study they did, it was a crossover. It was really, really well made. They had two groups of people. They controlled for macros. One group had unlimited access to unprocessed whole natural foods. It was in a lab. That's what I like about this, totally controlled. The other group had unlimited access to heavily processed foods, but the macros were very similar. Then they switched the groups after a certain period of time just to see if it was, maybe it's just the group or let's... And each time they had unlimited access to heavily processed food, they ate 500 more calories every single day.
Have you guys been getting a lot of response from the latest episode that we did about group classes?
I've seen a few people share it.
Lots of people sharing it, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you know,
not many people disagreeing.
I expected more of a backlash for that one because I know the first time I came out, and maybe it was
because you said group exercise should die. That's a bit of a harsh stance, yeah, Adam.
Kind of puts them in the corner, like, what?
Yeah. That's probably why.
They're trying to fight their way out.
It's more fun to defend it when it's that way. You know what I'm saying? If you just pussyfoot around it, it's no fun. I say, yes, it should. No, you know, somebody asked me in my questions today that, you know, they heard that episode and she likes to, you know, cycle. I think she said once or twice a week, it's like a cycle bar class. And what was my thoughts on that? And I said, if you do a cycling or a group class for this matter, and you are in the aesthetic shape that you like, and it is something that helps maintain your fitness and you enjoy it, by all means, I think it's really good. I really do. Mm-hmm. If you take a cardio kickboxing class, you take a Orange Theory class, and you're already in the current shape and you're happy with your physique where you're at, And this is something that you do and you enjoy the community of it. You enjoy all.
Yeah, you're healthy. You know your body.
Yes. I said, I don't have a problem with it. In fact, I think it's a great thing. My message is to the people that are frustrated and trying to change their body composition. And that is the modality mm-hmm. that they choose to go about it. That's where I think it's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea if you're still struggling to lose that 15 to 20 pounds or you want to build your butt or you have a look you're trying to obtain or a body fat percentage you want to get down to and your methods of going after that is through group training, i.e., cycling, Orange Theories, F45, then it's a terrible idea.
And unfortunately, that's who they attract.
Right. And so that was my point. But the reason why I actually said that is I actually clicked on the girl's profile and I saw she was in great shape. I saw that she was already in great shape and it made me rethink the way I would respond to this because the quick response would have been like, terrible idea. And I thought, wait a second, that's not necessarily true, Adam. Like, there's nothing wrong with somebody.
Do you talk to yourself like that?
Yeah. I do. Yeah. I do. I really do that.
No. You say your name and everything?
Yeah, yeah.
Listen,
come
Adam.
Come on, Adam. Come on.
Stop thinking that, Adam.
Come on, guy.
Yeah, you're handsome. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, Adam, you always think these things.
Do you guys remember the last time that it's actually the only time we all of us took a group class together? Do you guys remember?
Oh,
the bar class?
It was the bar. We didn't do the drums.
Remember? We did the drumsticks on the ground.
Yeah, we did the drumsticks too.
Oh, we did that too.
Really weird shit.
Dude, that was so dumb, dude. Yeah. You know what made me annoyed about that? This has happened to me before.
You just offended me.
I've taken a few group classes in the past, and because of the way I look, the goal of the instructor is to fuck
to
me
hammer
up.
You with weird stuff.
Yeah. So we never aired it, right? There was this great idea. That wasn't great. Obviously, we never aired it, but we were going to go take.
This goes in the box of not great ideas.
It's one of the few things we never aired. We were going to go and take a bar class because, you know, we're meatheads or whatever looking guys. We're going to go do this bar class.
It's going to be silly.
And it's going to be funny.
Yeah.
And the instructor, of course.
So serious.
And she looked at us and she's like, oh, I'm going to destroy you meatheads. Yeah. And she did. destroy us. Yeah. We were
I think why we couldn't put it out there was, I think that was, and that was where I, or at least I personally struggled with it.
Jazzercise endurance was
That I think she was so passionate about what she was doing and, you know, really, really believed in what she was teaching. And it would have been hard for us to talk about it without completely kind of shitting on it.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think that just all of our integrity.
Would have been mean.
That was a little mean-spirited. That would be, exactly. We took this person's time. They gave us one-on-one time. They took us through all these classes. She was excited about it, toured us with the facility. And, you know, if we were to talk about it, there's no way I think we could talk about it in the light of like, hey, this is great. You guys should all do it. It was more like, this is what we saw instantly. Like, this is why this is so bad. You know, this is get all this shortened range of motion pumping stuff. All you're doing is chasing the burn. All you're doing is chasing fatigue. All you're doing is trying to crush them.
It's applicable for certain dancers. That's what it was. That's where it kind of came from.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It came for because certain dancers that need to maintain
all dance moves.
Well, they need to maintain certain posture and certain stabilities and look a particular way while they're doing their movements,
right?
Then it makes sense. But as a workout, not really. Doesn't make any sense.
That was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Have you guys done any group classes in the past like that? Have you guys taken any group classes ever?
I mean, in terms of
Justin like was a big sport, Zumba guy.
I was real big in Zumba. I like to shake my hips. No, I mean, boom, boom, boom. We talked about this. I did CrossFit when it first came out. Like, I did like one or two classes and realized like how ridiculously, you know, insane it
you
was.
Just never drank the Kool-Aid.
Never drank. Like, it was, and of course, like, I checked myself right away where I was like getting totally like swept into the momentum of, you know, I see everybody else doing things. I'm like, I'm stronger than you. I'm going to do this. And then like loading all the weight up and didn't realize I had to sprint right after that. And I'm like, holy shit, what is happening in here? You know? And it just, and then I immediately was like, well, this is so asinine. Who would do this? And then it became a thing. And that's why I'm not invited on podcasts about CrossFit. Because I just talk so much shit.
That's so funny. Yeah. I don't want to say what's going into too many details, but there was a CrossFit podcast that explicitly said we want to interview Sal and Adam.
Sal and Adam. All right.
Maybe they just didn't know the name of the other guy.
No problem.
They're like, shit, I don't know the name of the other guy, okay, so let's just say Sal and Adam. Listen, maybe we'll just include him.
Yeah. I have so many friends in the space, too. It's so funny, because like I used to love doing, I would do not necessarily group training, but like we would all kind of collectively do something in the same space. You know, like the team would have like sort of an agenda, and then we would like take our own workout and apply our workout. But we were all like, we had this camaraderie in this community, but we were doing different things. Like we weren't like all structured with somebody up there, like, you know, doing the cadence for us or anything.
Yeah. I picture Doug being like a big group X guy back in the days. Yeah. I could see him with his like, you know, his leg warmers and stuff.
Yeah, headband.
Squat and then the side leg raise things.
Yeah. I feel like he's a big group X guy.
No, man, Doug was bodybuilding, man, back in the day. He was following all the routines and everything.
He was like you with a fishnet shirt. That's what he was doing.
half those.
The gloves with like the fingers.
I did have those.
Yeah.
You knew it.
I did have them.
What do you mean? Hold on. What did you have? That the fishnet shirt or
no,
the gloves?
No. The gloves.
Dude, that was a thing for a while. Yeah, everybody was wearing gloves.
I had the gloves simply because I saw Rocky.
You wore garden gloves, didn't you?
No. Okay. I wore the Rocky gloves, dude. I saw Rocky wear them. You know when I wore them? Of course. It's embarrassing. I wore them to school.
No, you didn't. No. You wore gloves.
Did you have a bouncy ball in your hand?
Hold
on a second.
You wore weightlifting gloves to school?
Bro, they were Rocky gloves.
Bro, I wish tell me there's a picture of this somewhere.
Somewhere. Oh, somewhere. I wore a leather jacket. Yeah. I wore the gloves.
The sleeveless sweatshirt.
And I wore the wife beater and the leather jacket.
Did you have like one of those things like Goonies?
A strong look.
You know, on Goonies where you had the
chest expander?
Yeah.
Stupidest exercise.
The springs is just on springs.
Yes. Get it in your sister's hair, rip it all out. So they used to have. But anyway, look, Justin, I don't feel bad for you for not getting invited to the podcast. That's what you get because every time we meet people who listen to Mind Pump, Justin's my favorite. That's what you get.
It is. That's fine.
Now you know what it feels like.
I'm discluded.
You know what I'm saying?
Hey, anyway. Yesterday, Justin, you were gonna you brought up this story and you didn't finish, and I wanted to hear it. I wanted to wait till we got on air so I could hear it for the first time. Is the Hugo Boss?
So I actually came across this because I've been listening to comedy podcasts and the History Hyenas, like one of my favorite new podcasts out there. And they just like talk about the most ridiculous things in history. And one of them they brought up was the fact that they're like, okay, you know, Nazi uniforms. I mean, let's say like they're responsible for some of the most atrocities, you know, the worst things about humanity, all this stuff. But I mean, let's all just be honest with ourselves. Like they had really good style.
What?
And I was like, oh my God. Right. And they're like, yeah, well, you know why? Because Hugo Boss is basically behind the designing all of those uniforms.
No way.
Is that how they started?
Is that a true story?
That's how Hugo Boss got like elevated to where they are now.
Well, the Volkswagen was a car that Hitler's regime also designed. It was the people's car.
Exactly.
I knew that Porsche and everything else
as a result.
And the Mitsubishi sign was from the Japanese Zeros, if I wasn't mistaken, the fighter planes that they had. So
what?
Yeah.
Well, they ripped off a lot of stuff. I mean, even with the swastika.
Hugo Boss, look at that.
Yeah, wow. All those. It's a very distinctive look. And the thing is, it just sounds, it's funny and it's ridiculous to talk about, but they had really good style.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Wow. I didn't even know that Hugo Boss has been around that long.
Yeah, a long time, dude.
When did they first start? Obviously from there, right?
Yeah.
What I want to know,
they were tied into Agent Orange and all that stuff?
No, that's Monsanto. Yeah, Monsanto made Agent Orange.
Justin, did the History Hyena guys, did they go into how they made the leap from that to being over like a huge popular brand in the US?
I
rocked Hugo Boss at one point for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, they just went off about like
1924. Yep, in Minzingen, Germany. Yeah. Mm.
Wow.
Hugo Boss is often styled as Boss, is a German luxury fashion house headquarters in Minzingen. It was founded in 1924 by Hugo Boss, and it originally produced general purpose clothing. With the rise of the Nazi Party in the 1930s, Boss began to produce and sell Nazi uniforms. So that existed before the Nazi Party.
That makes it worse.
He just took advantage of the situation.
Yeah,
Don't you think that makes it worse?
He got a big contract, but that's the thing. Some of these companies, they're going to get big government money to produce for. There's all kinds of dark sides to a lot of companies that people don't realize.
Bayer. See, I knew Bayer had also something connected to the Nazi Party.
They made the gas. That's what they did.
Wow. That's terrible.
Right? Is that what it is, Doug? I'm pretty sure
that's
the case.
Yeah, they're responsible for the gas, bro.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, hey, you know, they don't do that anymore, do they?
Yeah, I just took some that's aspirin.
A solid pivot, you know?
It's a real big pivot. That's
right
terrible.
Yeah.
Yay.
Dude, you guys watching the markets right now? As of the airing of this episode, are you guys seeing that this is like the worst drop in the market since 2008?
Did we not know this was? I mean, we all what comes up or what goes up must come down. Yeah, I mean, we are on this unbelievable record run.
Oh, it was a bull market forever.
Yeah, we hadn't seen it. Was only it was a matter of time before we saw it level out a little bit. What I find interesting is a lot of this is because of the coronavirus, am I correct?
Dude, totally, because the fundamentals, although there's some scary stuff too going on. We have a lot of debt. The Fed keeps injecting fake money into the market. And so at some point, there's going to be a market correction where all this malinvestment, you know, we're going to be, you know, we have to reckon with all of it. But right now, what it looks like is coronavirus. Lots of fears around coronavirus. Oh no, what's it going to do to the market? So people are pulling their money out. So we've had a 3-day just bloodbath, just drop, you know. Although it's still a huge drop, but we're still, I don't think we've still gone lower than 2018. So although we've had a huge drop, we're still way up because of how far we came.
Well, but is the how close is the drop in relation to 2008? Is it
what I mean? Like, we still haven't gone below the market, what the market was in 2018.
Yeah, I know.
A big drop though.
Yeah, so I know we're not, and I doubt we're gonna ever go back that low.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, what about what I'm talking about is the variance? Is the variance close to that? Like with the drop? Because we were nowhere near as high as we are now.
No, this is since 2008, not compared to 2008 crash.
Yes.
No, that was different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was based on something totally different. This, because the fundamentals are mixed, but there's some good news like unemployment, GDP, you know, even though we had a trade war and all stuff, GDP still grew over 2%. So there's still good fun. Here's what's going to be very interesting. I'm going to make this prediction right now. This is going to be used as a weapon by the Democrat Party to criticize the current administration, how they're handling the situation. Fear, you know, fear is a great way to make the current administration look bad. So if they can capitalize on this, and they're going to, politicians are experts at. I mean, I would, if I was on that side, I would look at this.
You're always itching for something to like throw them down with.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, here's something's going on. How can we twist this in a way to make ourselves, you know, kind of look better? But if the market keeps going down, oh boy, it's going to be an interesting election.
Do you think it's going to? I don't think it's going to.
I don't know, man, because it was so high for so long, people were always like, uh-oh, is it going to drop? And then they just needed this one thing. So I don't know, dude. We'll see, dude.
And you think it's related to the coronavirus like completely? Or what other factors you think?
That's it. There? It's all the news that's coming out.
It's just the news that's, and everybody gets scared.
Yeah, and people are getting scared because it's spreading all over the world and this and that. But still, it still is not, I mean, objectively. And I want to get an expert on this. I'm not a... None of us are experts on infectious diseases, but from what I've read objectively, this is nowhere near as scary as like the flu.
Yeah.
Just the regular flu.
Common flu.
I don't pay any attention to my my stocks or my Bitcoin. It's not good for my blood pressure. So you were mentioning the other day that Bitcoin was on the rise again.
It did, and it went back down. But typically if trust in the dollar goes down, gold goes up, and then Bitcoin has been a little bit like that too because it's an alternative currency. Dude, I read an article on Bitcoin that was hilarious though.
Did Facebook ever end up like really creating their own
version? That's in the works still.
That's in the works still. Okay, I remember they released like an announcement about that.
But. Dude, so there was this dude in Ireland who had owned 6,000 Bitcoins, and he had it spread across 12 accounts to guard against losing this crypto fortune. So it's something like worth like $58 million, right? In American money. And he printed all the codes out on a piece of paper. That way he would remember what the codes were or whatever. Anyway, he was also apparently growing marijuana in his house, got busted. The landlord went in there and threw everything away, including the codes to his Bitcoin.
You know, that was his only access?
That's it. Wow. He lost all of it.
Oh, wow.
That's it. He can't. He has no access to his $58 million. That's the one thing about Bitcoin is if you lose the code, you're fucked.
I'm going through this right now. So I have two different wallets, right?
I'm a trash guy in that area.
Binance and I have Coinbase. And the other day I was telling Katrina, I can't fucking remember my Coinbase. And so I've got money locked up in that. And we've been playing the freaking password game right now, trying to remember what it was. And
nothing you could do.
Right. Nightmare. It's like a bank I can call and be like, hey, my Social Security, here's my Social Security number. And, you know, because that's why if you do that with a bank, right, you forget your login password.
Oh, yeah. They have other steps you can take.
Yeah. I could forgot password and I could go those routes.
You can't retrieve it.
Yeah.
Wow. You're totally screwed. There was another guy.
That's true.
There was another dude in the UK who threw out a hard drive that stored $127 million worth of Bitcoin codes. And then there was another guy in Canada who died a couple years ago, and he left behind $190 million in cryptocurrency because he died, and he was the only one with the password.
Dude.
So his family...
So does that stay in circulation, or what? Like, how does that... It just sits there then?
Yeah. Wow. It's just there, and it's gone forever. Do you know how frustrating? Could you imagine that's how insane, frustrating dude. That would be if you lost the code?
Yeah, I'm mad over a couple grand right now. Could you imagine millions of dollars?
Dude, that's crazy, right?
Oh, God.
But anyway, so this is going to be an interesting time because the economy crushing, or at least the perception of a good economy, is what it was making Trump appear to be basically invincible.
Yeah.
But if the economy takes a dump, or people are at least that perceive the economy to be taking a dump, uh-oh.
Hey, I wanted to bring something up on the podcast. I keep forgetting to talk about it. We're making a push right now to start to pick up the interaction on all of our other platforms. So we put a lot of energy and effort towards the podcast, and we are probably most active on Instagram. And we've really treated our YouTube channels kind of like the redheaded stepchild.
I wonder if that's offensive.
We love you, gingers.
I wonder if that's considered offensive nowadays.
Yeah, I'm sure everything is offensive today, right? So what I mean by that is it's the last order of operation for us on the things that we worry about on a day-to-day basis, and we're trying to put more energy and focus on that. And it's continued to grow rapidly, both the Mind Pump TV YouTube and then also the Mind Pump podcast YouTube. So a lot of people may not know this, but we take, like when we do a Q&A like today, is we have the whole episode recorded, and then Andrew actually goes through and clips every single question. So I get this all the time where I have a family friend who's like, I really want to share that topic you guys talked about the other day when you were covering deadlift, or when you guys were talking about gut health the other day. And it's like, well, if you go to the Mind Pump podcast YouTube channel, all the questions are broken up into individual questions, and it's just that 5 or 8 minute clip where Doug reads the question, and then we go in and we answer it. Really easy to share. So, and one of the best ways to get notified when all that stuff gets put up is to make sure that when you subscribe to the channel that you click the little bell to get the notification. So after you subscribe to the two channels, hit the notification so we get notified when the new content comes up. And a lot more visits with the boys and I on the YouTube channel for Mind Pump TV. And then that's something that we've been progressing on.
You guys ever can see how handsome we are.
Or not. Yeah. Do you guys ever watch our podcast on video?
I don't.
Oh, it's funny, dude. I don't watch it a whole lot, but it's funny because...
I started to recently.
Yeah, you hear us tell stories and make fun of each other, but then when you can see our facial expressions, it's great. It's a good time. Reminds me of why I'm on podcast and not on TV, though. Yeah. that's the other thing. Anyway, I got some interesting, very fascinating, and good news. Very, very good news. So this is Alzheimer news. Okay, this is fascinating. This is what the article said. It was I think it was Science Daily that published this. Here's what the article says: for the first time ever, an intervention has been able to slow and even halt degeneration for people with Alzheimer's over a long period. So for the first time ever, they were able to show an intervention, something that you could do in your life that stopped Alzheimer's from progressing. And in some of these people actually saw it go back a little bit. You want to guess what that thing was? Lifting weights.
Oh.
Boom.
Lifting weights. This is the first intervention they've ever seen that was able to...
How did you not transition to this when we were talking about Alzheimer's earlier?
Because it was just...
That was a perfect transition for this.
I forgot. What are you going to do?
You should probably apply this weightlifting concept.
Yeah, it's like, these guys talking about Alzheimer's, we were just talking about it like 5 minutes ago. That would have been a beautiful segue.
Hey, what do you call it?
Segue?
No. What do you call the disease?
Huh?
Al what?
Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Even Michael Jordan had off games. You know what I mean?
I think you call that old timers or Alzheimer's. when I was younger, I thought
old timeies.
Yeah. Yeah. But they found research found that 6 months of strength training can protect brain areas especially vulnerable to Alzheimer's disease up to 1 year later. So what they actually did is they had these people lift weights. They looked at their brain. Then many of them stopped lifting weights. Up to a year later, there were protective effects from resistance training.
Wow, that long. Wow.
Yes, dude. I'm telling you guys, man, resistance training is on the cusp of being the mainstream way that people
now that's interesting considering how
you
fast
just got this body of evidence now that's just stacking
it's
up.
It's amazing.
That's interesting because how fast atrophy kicks in.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess in terms of the brain, I would think so too, but they saw these protective effects last.
Although I also know that even when you, if you've trained long enough for sure, and years consistently, even with no lifting weights, poor diet for a while, you still seem to have a little more muscle than what you had before you ever started.
Well, what about muscle memory?
Right.
You know, so this is a common term you hear among like fitness people, trainers, bodybuilders called muscle memory, where let's say it takes me a year to gain 10 pounds of lean body mass and gain a certain amount of strength. And it's a year of hard work, diet, and focus. And then I stop. I totally stop working out. My diet goes back to where it was before. And I lose all that. I lose all 10 pounds, lose all the strength gains. Maybe it takes 3 or 4 months of being inactive. Then I go back to the gym. I'll gain back what I lost way faster than it took me to gain it in the first place.
Yeah.
So it might have taken me a year to gain 10 pounds, but when I go back, it may only take me 3 months. And the longer you build that muscle, the longer you keep it while you're working out, the faster that happens. Because I know now I could stop working out and lose everything, and I know I could gain it back so quickly just because I've been doing it for so long. So something stays, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what interests me about like research around like hyperplasia and wondering if that has something to do with it. Because you know what fascinates me too is I remember being a 18-year-old, 19-year-old boy lifting dumbbell chest press, and like it took me forever to get to like the 60s where I can be so deconditioned I could have not lifted for 3 months straight and I can still comfortably do 70-pound dumbbells, no problem.
Right. Even like all those neural connections, like you've already established like those pathways. It's like now if you can respond once you get that stimulus again. I feel like your body would be able to respond.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. There's something that stays, that sticks. Yeah. Even though the body adapts, and I think this is probably more true the longer you train. Like, have you guys ever trained older people, let's say over the age of 50 or 60, who haven't worked out or been active for a long time, but they had a really long history in the past of being high-level athlete or something like that, and you can tell. You train them, and you say,
totally.
I remember one time I was when I used to have my studio, I was in between clients. I had just finished my own workout, so I had the doors open. I used to like to do that. And there was this old man, probably in his late 70s, early 80s, and he walks in, and he had just these – I mean, he looked like an old man, but when you – to the trained eye, I can tell. I can look at somebody and I could tell they either work out or they did for a long time. So I looked at him, this little guy, too short. It's like 5'8 or whatever. And he had these meaty little forearms and these like strong looking little hands. And he comes in and he has an accent. It's a Russian accent.
Oh, is that the guy that used to wear all white all the time? And he used to wear gold chains and stuff?
No,
real short.
No, I don't. Who's that?
Oh, yeah. He used to come in the Santa Teresa gym.
Oh, really?
Time. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I think Russian accent had a
maybe.
Short. He had a toupee, I think.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, he comes up to me and he's speaking broken English.
The ab roller.
Yeah, yeah.
He's speaking broken English to me and he goes, oh, and he looks the kettlebells. He liked the kettlebells. So he says, can I lift it? I said, sure. And he picks it up and it's like a 50-pound kettlebell, and he knows how to hold it, and he presses it over his head, and he puts it down. And so I was obviously super intrigued, and I'm like, "What? Where did you learn that? What's going on?" And he goes, "Oh, I used to be an Olympic lifter for the Soviet Union back in the, I don't remember what it was, the 70s or 60s." And I'm like, "Do you exercise now?" He goes, "No, I don't work out anymore." But I remember looking at him and thinking, "Okay, it's something permanent stuck with this guy,
right?
Because of the way he was just built, and he was able to lift a 50-pound, he's like 70-something years old,
yeah,
really, really cool."
Huh.
Anyway, what was that thing about the middle school dances that, yeah, that Doug shared?
I was going to bring that up, but yeah, Doug shared an article the other day that kind of got me like, oh, I don't know. I got irritated by it. Basically, what happened was, I think it was in Utah where this girl's going to a school dance and was like really looking forward to it. Had like, you know, a crush on this boy, and the boy, you know, she was waiting to go dance with him. Another boy kind of cut in front and like asked to dance, and this boy actually made her really uncomfortable. And she was about to kind of like say, yeah, no, like, and basically deny him from the dance. The principal steps in and is like, no, it's against policy. Like, so basically mandated that she dance with this other boy. What? And then later on in the, you know, in the dance, I guess she was able to dance, you know, with the boy she wanted to, but then talked to her mom about it and was like really kind of distraught about the whole thing. And then it went on Facebook and it blew up and it turned into this big issue. Like, are we, you know, like what kind of message are we sending? You know,
well,
like,
so okay, I didn't read this. So is it
like the school policy?
Yeah,
school policy
that if someone asks you to dance, that you must say yes.
They're trying to promote like, you know, being not like
being inclusive.
Yeah, being inclusive, being nice, all this stuff for boys. But now look what do you think? You know, that really is going to set up
is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. That's terrible,
crazy, right?
Okay, look, if somebody forces you to do something, guess what? That wasn't you being nice. You're not teaching anybody niceness because they're forced to do something, because if they don't, they get in trouble. That'd be like me going to Adam, holding a gun to his head and saying, donate your money to charity. Does that make him a good guy? Because no, but it makes him somebody scared. Oh, shit, I better give money. That's a terrible precedent. And not only
terrible precedent.
You're teaching the boys. I hear some of the best lessons I ever learned as a boy was getting rejected by girls.
That's what forms you, you know, in your character later for you to then, you know, make it in the real world. Like, you're going to get rejected. That's just part of life. Like, and you got to figure out why. Like, they're not going to figure out why. And like, not only that, but you know, the poor girl, like if she's in a situation with a boy where she's uncomfortable, you know, this sort of idea I'm sure is going to like, you know, like filter in, like, you know, I don't want to be mean, you know, and like if she's uncomfortable, she needs to be able to say no.
Oh my gosh.
Was there a bunch of heat around on Facebook over
it? I think the parents like blew up about it, but I think again, this is unintended consequences for like mandating a policy you think is the right thing. This is not the right thing.
Were you able, does the article have the actual policy, Doug? Can you see like what the school mandated? I don't want to twist this all up.
Because that sounds so crazy to
me. It does. It sounds so illogical to me that someone would say, okay, here's the rule. If any boy asks you to dance, you have to say yes.
That's pretty much what it summed up to be.
It seems to be their policy.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, it says it requires kids to dance with anyone who asks.
Yeah. Wow. You know what that sounds like? You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like you took adolescent boys and you said, hey, you guys want to make some rules for the dance?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, this is all now, right.
Everyone has to say yes.
Now, not that this changes it, because I don't know, like what we don't know. Okay, so imagine being in the principal's and you have this rule. Maybe you don't enforce it very much, but you do it because you've either got special needs kids there or you have kids that get left out and are not. And let's pretend for a second that this is the most popular girl in school. She's got a boyfriend who she can't wait to dance with. That's who she wants to dance with. And it's this nerdy kid that nobody talks to or is on the spectrum somehow. And he comes up and he asks, and the little girl says, no, I don't want to dance with him. And then the principal intervenes and says, you should dance with him.
I don't care.
No.
I agree. I'm not saying, but I mean, it doesn't look as bad to me.
Yep, just as bad because, first of all, she's not a commodity that you could just trade around.
Agreed.
And number two, you know, now there's one thing to be mean. Okay. If she said no and then said you're fat, you're ugly, whatever, that's like, look, you can't, like, that's mean. Don't say that to him. But to say no, that's within your right. And here's the deal. Regardless of what your challenges are in life, life doesn't give a shit. So, okay, fine. You grow up and you go to a school where everybody has to say yes to you. And you're like, this is awesome. At some point, you go in the real world, and how are you going to fare in the real world that doesn't care? You can't force everybody to.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, that's how you develop your character. And you know, I had a buddy who he's probably listening right now. He doesn't care. He wasn't the best looking dude in the world. Okay, he wasn't very good looking. out of shape, not very tall, but because of this, growing up, he became the most charming, entertaining, likable individual you've ever met in your life, to the point where when he became an adult, if you were going to a bar and you were trying to attract women, you wanted him with you because everybody wanted to be around this guy. And he always had dates, but he learned that because he had to develop other skills. Mm. How the hell are you going to learn any of that shit if everybody's supposed to say hi to you?
Yeah. And again, what it falls back on to me is the way that you're raised, and it's your parents' responsibility to instill that in the kid that, oh, maybe I should look, at this left out kid and be nice and inclusive to them. But that's completely on the kid for them to decide who are they going to become as a human being. You can't force people to become something. They have to develop that themselves.
It makes me think about, I got emotional the other day. It's like so happy and emotional. I was at Safeway, and the kid that was bagging my groceries was blind. It was actually a blind kid, and he was doing a good job bagging my groceries. And part of me wanted to just go up to him and talk to him and be like, dude, but I don't want him to feel... I don't want to feel condescending or any of that to him, But as I'm watching this kid, I'm like, look at this dude. He's blind and he got a job. He's bagging groceries, obviously way more challenged than somebody who's got full sight or whatever. And yet he's doing it anyway. His parents did a damn good job because that kid didn't let that stop him from, he's literally just doing he's doing a job. When most people would say to him, you don't have to do anything. You can't do that because you need to be able to see. Mm-hmm. He was doing it, and he was doing it good. And I was like, fuck yeah, man. That's a great kid right there.
This quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory-tested, certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk-free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com. And use the coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
All right, our first question is from Kevin Curry 87. When supplementing with creatine, should your intake differ on non-training days?
Oh, yeah. Love talking about creatine. It's easily the most effective and well-studied. That's the other part that's important about creatine. Creatine has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies that have been done on it showing its efficacy and its safety. A lot of safety studies. So creatine is extremely backed scientifically. And a lot of studies are showing that creatine doesn't just benefit strength and performance. It has antioxidant benefits. It's got cognitive boosting benefits, especially in vegans, but also in omnivores. Mm-hmm. It's got lots of health benefits. Creatine is, by the way, it's not for everybody. Some people will take creatine and notice gastro upset.
Very small percentage.
Small percentage. But most people supplementing with creatine, I don't even care if you don't work out. I think if you're an adult, creatine probably will benefit you. In fact, there's these anti-aging pills and health pills now are coming with creatine in it because they're finding it
interesting.
Really, really interesting. But creatine's a great supplement. Should you take less on non-training days? The studies show that that when you take it makes a little bit of a difference. Studies show that taking it right after your workout increases the uptake of creatine. Studies also show that when you take it alongside caffeine, that you reduce some of its intake. Also, if you take it with carbohydrates,
I didn't know that about the caffeine.
Yeah, and it's like some studies say
don't some of these supplement companies actually pair it with pre-workouts?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Yeah,
that's their whole thing.
Yeah.
No, you creatine.
Interesting.
This is all splitting hairs because if you take it on a regular basis, I don't think it makes a difference. But splitting hairs, you want to take creatine post-workout. Does that mean you should take it less or not take it on your non-training days? That's what I do. There's no studies to support that though. But here's what I do. I only take creatine on the days that I lift weights, and on the days that I don't take it. But I also eat a lot of red meat,
So think you just you're talking about 3 to 5 grams of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about very much of it. I would take it every day. If you're taking it to take it and see the performance from it, take it every day, take it consistently. I think it's easier to do that than to try and go I'm only doing it on these days versus these days. We've talked before about it, and I forget the amount of ounces of meat that you have to consume in order to equate to, 3 to 5 grams of creatine. I've read it before.
It's a decent amount.
It is a decent amount. Yeah. Most people definitely don't eat it in a single day, so it doesn't hurt even somebody who does eat a lot of red meat to still take, you know, at least 3 grams of creatine, and taking 5 every single day with or without red meat in the diet. You're not going to oversaturate it. You're not going to do it. It's not going to have any adverse effects from it, as long as it's something that doesn't already bother you.
Now, when creatine first came out, they recommended that people do what's called a loading phase, where for the first, I think it was like 5 or 7 days, you take 15 or 20 grams of creatine. And then after that, you just take 5 grams of creatine, because the studies show that you would top out your stores of ATP faster if you took more in the beginning. Now, although that's true, the difference is tiny. You're talking about days faster, like a few days faster. And honestly, I think supplement companies did that to promote people using more creatine.
Of course they did.
I think they're like, take a shit ton for a week. That's a good idea. So you don't need to do that if you're taking it. Legion does a good job with their creatine. First off, they use creatine monohydrate. That's the other question I get. What type of creatine should I take? Because creatine is so popular and there's so many studies supporting it, and for everything, not just muscle gain, strength, but also indirectly for fat loss, indirectly for testosterone, in men, and of course for health, lots of alternatives that come out. Like,
it's been bastardized. There's lots of other alternatives.
Yeah, creatine HCL and creatine citrate and crealkaline. And what's funny is, first off, 99% of the studies are done on creatine monohydrate. Number two, when they do studies on the other forms of creatine, they don't work as well. They actually did one on crealkaline, which was the, take this, you don't get bloated, and it's supposed to, which is bullshit. They compared
it to... Worst marketing ever on that.
They compared it to creatine monohydrate. Creatine monohydrate was actually more effective and way cheaper. It's actually inexpensive. Legion combines it with L-carnitine tartrate, which is a version of L-carnitine, an amino acid that's utilized in transport of energy to the cells. And
so what's the theory behind pairing it with that?
Increased creatine uptake, and also because, here's the thing I like about Mike Matthews. This is why we decided to work with Legion. He only does what he sees evidence for. So he doesn't do anything that's speculative.
Right.
If you see the evidence or whatever, then I'm going to...
Just the efficacious dose.
Yeah, it's got to be like, okay, I got to have studies that support this. And taking L-carnitine tartrate post-workout has been shown in advanced athletes, at least, to speed up recovery. So because creatine is good to take post-workout, he combined it with L-carnitine tartrate, put it together in a drink, take it post-workout. The way I use it is, if I'm using pure creatine monohydrate powder without anything else, I'll just put it in my post-workout shake or just drink it on its own afterwards. If I'm using Legion, I actually use that during my workout because it tastes good. So it's like, I'm going to drink water anyway while I'm working out. I might as well sip on this the whole time. Now, the things you may notice from creatine when you take it, you'll gain some weight. So you will gain between 1 to, depending on how much muscle you have.
It's good weight, though. I try to explain this to everybody. It's holding water in the muscle.
In the muscle.
Yep.
Yeah. That's
why the whole bloat thing is so irritating.
It's a different look than it being like you getting it in your gut and feeling bloated and fat.
Your muscles are going to look more full. I'll use a term that people like, toned. So if you gain 1 pound or 2 pounds of intramuscular fluid, you're just going to feel tighter and more toned, because I know a lot of women are like, I don't want to gain any weight. No. This is the kind that you want. That's why you're lifting weights in the first place. And then that, because muscles have more water in them, they actually build faster also. So creatine has this long-term muscle-building effect from the extra fluid in your muscle. So across the board, it's one of the only supplements that I'm like, this is one that, try it out, see if you have gastro distress. If you don't, like most people won't, take it. It's a good supplement.
Next question is from Sassney Fitness. How can you get quality sleep when working shifts?
Oh, man. By shifts, they mean swing shift, right? Yeah. Is that what that means?
Yeah. So I have my
one of the hardest things to deal with.
Oh, dude. Would you ever train clients?
Terrible schedule. Yeah.
So difficult.
Courtney did that for quite some time when we first were married.
So, really?
Yeah.
Because she's a nurse.
In the graveyard, yeah.
Yeah. I have so my sister's boyfriend is a police officer. Just became one 2 years ago in San Jose. And I don't know if you guys know this, but when you first become a police officer, the first couple years, it's like they give you the shifts. Like you're going to work the midnight shifts and whatever.
Oh, you got to earn it.
You got to earn it. So he was doing this, and he was a ex-special forces, super high performance type of dude. But after about 6 months of this, I mean, we had dinner at my mom's house on one of the rare occasions he had the weekend off. And he's like, dude, he goes, it's killing me. He's like, so hard. I feel terrible physically and mentally. Like, what can I do? So what I recommended that he do was when about an hour to 2 hours, preferably before he was supposed to go home. So he would get off at like, I think it was like 11 a.m., which what he was supposed to do is go home and then get sleep, right? Go to sleep. But the sun is out. It's bright. Like, what do you do? So I said, okay, first off, black out your bedroom completely. You need to have zero light coming into your room.
Yeah.
Number two, it's hard for your brain to go from bright light to sleep. So it's like you can't just come home, sunlight everywhere, you know, or bright lights of the office or whatever, because, you know, at the end of a shift, you would have to do paperwork and then just decide you're going to go to bed. 2 hours before, prepare your brain that it's nighttime. So I told him wear blue light blocking glasses, the ones designed for night.
Well, this is where I feel like this has tremendous value. Huge. I think this has value anyways. I utilize them all the time. But I wish I understood.
This is vital in this situation.
Right. I wish I understood this back when I was training clients a decade ago, like how important the circadian rhythm was and the importance of sleep and the importance of them preparing themselves for sleep. And has to be one of the hardest. It's already challenging for normal people that are working with the sun to prepare themselves to go to bed.
Yeah.
It's really tough if you're asking somebody at noon or one in the afternoon to try and close their eyes and go to sleep.
Yeah. So I told them, and I told them some other stuff, because the sun on your skin will also tell your brain that the sun is out or whatever. So I told him, when you get in your car, turn on your AC, get your body cold, because that'll help you sleep, and wear something that covers most of your skin. You want your skin out of the sun as well, because you don't want to be in like shorts, short sleeve, wear your blue light blocking glasses, but you know your sun's all over your body. So I said, put on some long sleeves.
Hope they don't live in the desert.
Yeah, cover everything. Turn on your AC, get your body cold. Put on blue light blocking glasses. And then, of course, later on, he's like, I don't like the blue light blocking glasses because they're orange or they're red. Like, what's the deal? And so then that's when we started working with Felix Gray. So I'm like, here you go. Because what he does is, an hour or two before he goes home, he's doing paperwork for all the shit that he did during a shift. Mm-hmm. And wearing colored glasses isn't the easiest thing. So he got the Felix, because the Felix Gray ones don't change the color of the room.
Yeah, it's so tough because you're buzzing, you know, immediately right after work. Half the time you want to like, you want to talk to somebody. And like, I remember like Courtney coming home from work, like trying to wind down was the most difficult thing. And then finally like playing really like classical music and, you know, like you said, like turn the AC on and then like really trying to calm herself down. Helped tremendously.
Well, this is where I would even couple like Brain FM with this.
Totally.
Yeah, like, I mean, you take, do something like that, put like the sleep Brain FM mode on, you know, I mean, that would be ideal. Throw those blue blockers on, throw the sleep mode in there, get it cool inside your room to create that environment. And that'll probably put someone down.
Totally. You know, the World Health Organization labels shift work as a high level carcinogen.
Right. Yeah.
And heart disease and cancer is higher because it throws off your circadian rhythm.
Now,
so
I wonder though, I mean, and that's probably because most people just go about it and don't think twice about it, right? Yeah. I wonder though if some people actually made the effort to really do the things that you're talking
about.
Like
how much of an effect?
Right, like how much more you know, would it affect them if they were doing these steps?
Well, extreme cases, you need extreme aids. You really need to like research like what you can do to prevent all that.
Yeah, and if you think about it, like think about it this way. I'm about to get into a heavy workout, right? I don't go from taking a nap or, you know, relaxing in a dark room to going to the gym to now lifting super heavy. It's a way too crazy of a shift. Typically what I do is I prepare myself mentally about an hour before. I'm ready. When I get to the gym, I'm ready to rock and roll. Same thing for sleep. You have to have you have to prepare your mind and your body for sleep. You can't expect to go from work to bed and just, you can shut your eye. Even if you're exhausted, here's the thing. They've done studies on this. You could be dead exhausted and go to sleep right away, but your sleep quality is shit because your brain
still buzzing
from thinking it's daytime and all that stuff. So like that's what I always tell people, shift workers. I say 2 hours before you want to go to bed, do everything you can to put yourself in a mental state to prepare yourself for sleep, you know, that 2 hours later.
Next question is from Landon Bergenthal. Do you believe it's possible to become a professional athlete with a balanced lifestyle?
Oh, cool question.
Yeah, no.
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 Not even close.
Even if you pay millions for recovery, you're not balanced.
Yeah, not a professional.
Yeah, have you, I mean, you look at the lifespan of professional athletes and their injury rate, and I think anytime you're super high performing in any direction, it's going to take away from
you're an extreme
stuff. Yeah, you're going to be an extreme.
This is also why I think that we all admire them and and look up, because it's one of the most ultimate sacrifices. Whatever you've become brilliant or an expert or the best at or a professional at, you've had to sacrifice a ton in your life. And most people aren't willing to do that.
No.
And most people don't want to do that, but we admire people that do, and it's fun to watch. And I think that's part of what makes it fun to watch, is that I could never do that.
Did you, do you guys, I don't know if you guys got this feeling from watching the Elon Musk interview with Rogan like I did, but as I was watching it, a few times you could hear him, he sounded like he was like he was tormented. Yeah. By his own,
tortured by all his ideas.
It's like listening to Jordan Peterson.
Like just single-minded focus.
Yeah.
Probably not a great dad. Probably not great anywhere else. And you could tell he was a bit tormented. You know, when we talk about balance to the average person, that doesn't mean you can't have periods of extreme achievement.
Yes,
I think the key is that your baseline is balanced. That's where you always go to. That's like home base.
Yeah,
you know. But then there's periods of time where you
stretch yourself.
You stretch yourself.
Well, I mean, for me, the best example I have personally is competing. There was a period of 4 years of my life where I was completely out of balance.
Now, how many days a week were you working out?
I was 7 days. I was in the gym
every day.
For four years. Maybe I took a couple days off in 4 years' time of every single day and not missing weighing and measuring and tracking my food. I mean, literally every single day, super unbalanced.
Right.
And yes, did I try and integrate family and still be a good boyfriend and still see my family, do things like that? Yeah, I tried to do that stuff and to create as much balance as I could. But at the end of the day, they all took a back seat to the number one priority, which was becoming this pro bodybuilder. So, I mean, and to me, that's a very small example. Becoming a pro basketball player or a baseball player or a sport like that, it's way more strenuous than I think getting on stage and presenting my physique shredded.
This reminds me of people who they'll compete in something like that, or they'll become they'll do a high level marathon or whatever. But because they have no balanced baseline, it becomes this extreme swing. You know what I mean? It's like I'm either shredded for my competition or I'm super high performance for my competition. Then when I'm done, I don't have a balanced baseline. So I end up going in the opposite
direction. You turn your governor off completely.
I go way in the opposite direction.
You know where I also see this, and it's not just in professional sports. I see this in super famous social media people. When you see somebody who is great at Instagram and great at YouTube or Facebook and their millions of followers.
They suck at actually talking to you in person.
Right. They've gotten so good at hacking the algorithm and putting out content that makes people want to pay attention to what they're doing. And in real life, they're fucking up all over the place.
Yeah.
They're a mess with their relationship. They're a mess with their friends and family.
I see that.
They're
a
mess with their social skills because all of their energy and effort has been put into this world. That's just with anything. You're going to become great at something. It's a give and take. You're going to lose in some places. But I do love the point you make, Sal, that I think there's nothing wrong. I went into competing knowing that.
Yeah.
Right? I went in knowing that this is not something I want to do for the rest of my life. This is a goal I have in mind. I know it's a ridiculous...
It's a season of your life right here.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous goal. I remember having the conversation very vividly with Katrina saying that this is the plan. This is what I'm going to do. Bear with me. It's not going to be the rest of our life. I remember her checking back in with me about 2.5-3 years in going are you sure this is not going to be the rest of our life? And me going, I promise it's not going to be the rest of our life. And sure as shit, once we got to a point where no one gave a shit if I was a bodybuilder, competitor guy anyways anymore. Mind Pump was much bigger than whoever I was before. Then I didn't have to anymore. And that was one of the greatest days, was to be able to walk away from doing that shit.
Yeah.
Next question is from Colin Self. As a trainer, what should you consider before leaving a big box gym to become an independent trainer?
Oh, good. I love this question.
I know. I love this question. Yeah,
managing gyms, it was like I would get trainers who, it was always trainers. Nobody else really did this in the gym. But they would get to a certain point with clients, or they get a certain level of comfort, and then they'd be like, they'd start doing the math.
Yeah, like, I could make so much more money.
Like, let's see, the gym, it charges $80 a session. I'm getting paid $30 a session. Yeah. And then they do the math. I do 30 sessions a week. Oh my gosh, I could be making this much money. Doesn't work that way. Here's what I would always tell them. If you're not crushing it in your gym, if you're not like the best person in there, bringing in the most sales with the most clients, the odds that you'll success on your own are like less than 5%.
Very slim.
Like you're not going to succeed. If you can't make it in a big box gym.
That's the proving grounds.
Oh, dude.
I mean, you have everything, every resource accessible there at the big box gym. I mean, you have all the forms. You have all the potential clients, like literally walking through the front door. I mean, like how much more do you need to have a successful business if you're really motivated enough to produce? And so, again, like to Sal's point, you do really have to prove yourself. You have to be, one of the top ones in there that everybody knows it. Like you're very comfortable knowing. And I mean, even when I was like in that environment, I remember like consulting with Adam quite a bit. Like, what should I look out for? Like, who's really killing it out there in the independent training world? Like all these things, like where am I actually going to market myself? Like, what are the venues for that? Like, what kind of things? Like, there's so many things to really consider, even a presence online these days is humongous. Like a social media presence needs to be established. Like people need to be able to find you. So, I mean, it seems daunting. It's not impossible. Like it, especially if you are, very good at, if you're very organized, if you can really like, manage yourself, like that's something that I always, probably manage myself better than anybody else. So it was a good fit for me. But it's definitely on that level where, really consider where you are and your status right now in your gym.
Well, you were one of the top trainers at one of the biggest big box companies in the world. You were one of the top trainers at 24 Hour Fitness. You left and you did well. I would say successful independent trainers make up the top 1% of successful trainers. That's it. I mean, after that, if you're not blowing it out at your big box gym, you're going to crash and burn out in the open world.
Well, this is kind of business 101. When you work for a big box gym, they are providing the leads and opportunities for you, which is the single most challenging part about scaling any business. No matter what we are talking about, if you are trying to scale and build a business, you need leads and opportunities. And a company like 24 Hour Fitness pays millions of dollars monthly to drive leads through the door, which you get the opportunity as a trainer in a big box gym to see if you can close and present and sell them on the idea that you're a good trainer. And that, if you can't prove to be the best at that when somebody is taking care of the most difficult part about building and scaling a business, then you are really setting yourself up for failure to go out and try and figure that piece out without the assistance of millions of dollars being advertised and funded to give you those leads and opportunities. I remember when I was really upset that the company put a ceiling on my overrides. This was about like the eighth year that I was in the company, and when I really became checked out that I was no longer going to work for them. And for me, I had got used to a six-figure lifestyle, and they basically put a ceiling on how much money I could make, and that really pissed me off. And back then, you were not allowed to moonlight, right, as a trainer. You couldn't go train somewhere else or run a boot camp while also working there, and I chose to do it. And when I did it, though, because I was thinking, okay, this could be my transition to moving out from 24 Hour Fitness, I made a point to build my boot camp business without using a single client that came from the gym.
You had to prove to yourself.
And it was exactly. It wasn't about making money for me. It was about proving to myself, can I generate enough traffic to come to this boot camp class that I'm not, and where I'm not relying on this lead generating machine that I'm currently working in. And if I can't do that, I better just fucking shut up and take the nonsense that I don't like that this company's laying out here for a new comp plan, because I'm not good enough to go out there and do that. So it was very important to me that I could do that. I used to give the same advice to any trainers that are looking to transition from a big box to private is just because you build up your clientele at a big box doesn't mean you're necessarily ready to go private. Like, I would make a point to start to try and build a private business that is not sucking from the current one that you've been handed to from this big box that's providing all the leads, and see how difficult that is and learn to overcome that, i.e. what Justin was saying, through marketing yourself through online, social media. Find ways to build your business, not relying on those, on any clients that you've received from that big box.
Yeah, take the training wheels off.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, if you can prove to yourself that you can do that, then you'll probably be a trainer that will be have success when you go independent.
The biggest challenge I used to have with the trainers that worked for me in the big box was how to get clients off the floor, how to get new clients off the floor. Now, we're talking about a 35,000 square foot gym with hundreds of workouts every single day. The vast majority of these people didn't have a trainer. They're already in the gym, mm-hmm, and they're already
working. They're the warmest leads you can
get. Oh my God, it doesn't get any more than that, right?
They're already interested in what you have to
sell.
They're already interested in what you have to sell.
They're working out. Yeah. They're already working out. They're in your house. You just go, okay, go talk to someone and get a client. They'd be like, oh, I can't do that. I don't know what to ask them. What am I going to do? They're going to say no. Now imagine trying to do that at the grocery store.
Yeah,
or at Starbucks. That's what happens when you're independent,
by
the way.
You gotta do all that.
When you're independent, you don't got a big old gym with lots of people working out that you can go talk to. You go outside in the real world. Oh, these are
I'm
people.
Going to golf courses. I'm going to, you know, clinics.
Oh,
anything,
dude. It's hard. So if you're not crushing it, like in a, this is what I tell you what. I got to the point working in big box gyms, managing these gyms before I went off and opened my own studio. I knew this was my thing. I would go into a gym and I would bet trainers, and I'd tell them, I need you to go talk to people on the floor. Oh, I can't do it. I'd say, I bet you in the next 30 minutes, I can get someone to purchase 10 sessions off the floor. And I would do this to trainers all the time just to show them that it was possible. And I was so confident that I could go do it. It was easy in a gym. When I went on my own, those skills came very much in handy, but it was way more difficult. I would have to go inside grocery stores, set up outside the Whole Foods, go to the coffee shop, talk to business owners. That's what you're doing. That's what you're doing. You're going out and you're talking to people. If that makes you feel uncomfortable, you're fucked. Yeah. You're totally, totally screwed.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in a big box and you're murdering it, you're crushing, and the part that you're crushing the most at is at getting new clients. That's what you're really, really good at. Your odds are higher, but they're still not super great. I'm just being very honest.
Oh, yeah.
Being an independent trainer is very difficult. Now,
there's no easy way into it.
No. Now, if you do it and you do it well, of course, it's extremely rewarding.
Yep.
If you love fitness and you love helping people, you can make your own, you know, at some point you make your own schedule once you start to build a reputation, which takes years, by the way. Mm-hmm. As an independent trainer, it takes years for referrals to start coming in and for you to have this reputation. But if you do that, then it is very rewarding, but it's definitely nowhere near easy. I would say it's one of the more difficult things to do. And with that, go to mindpumpfree.com and download all of our fitness guides. By the way, we have a personal training guide that's on there for free. So if you're listening and you're thinking about becoming a trainer or you're a new trainer, go check that out. You can also find the three of us on Instagram. You can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin, me at Mind Pump Sal, and Adam at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.